When Stephanie Spielman passed away from breast cancer in November 2009, she left behind a legacy of courage and resilience and a pay-it-forward attitude shared by her family, especially her spouse, Chris Spielman, a four-time Pro Bowl linebacker, high school and Ohio State football legend. The couple made headlines soon after her diagnosis 12 years before, when Chris decided to take a one-year leave from football to help his wife and their young family through her treatments.
Chris was having a press conference telling everybody he was staying home for a year. He said, "What do you want me to say? What should I tell them?" And immediately I saw an opportunity of a way of serving. I right away said, "Tell them I have breast cancer," because I wasn't ashamed. And I wanted our kids to see that we were able to take something bad and make good come from it.
The couple went on to work tirelessly to raise awareness of and money for breast cancer research. They formed the Stephanie Spielman Fund for Breast Cancer Research at the James Cancer Hospital and Soloff Research Institute at Ohio State University. To date, they have raised more than $10 million for patient care and research, $10 million that they announced yesterday. And Chris Spielman has written a book with ESPN reporter Bruce Hooley. It's called That's Why I'm Here: The Chris and Stephanie Spielman Story. He's with us in the studio right now. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
To our listeners, has the Chris and Stephanie Spielman story touched you in a special way? Maybe changed your life? Give us a call and share your thoughts. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, and you can go on the Facebook page as well. So, Chris Spielman, why'd you write the book?
Well, I wanted to write the book because Stephanie and I decided this story should be told, and not for any personal gain or self-acknowledgement, but for help. Because a lot of times when people go through this, whether it's a diagnosis or even a caregiver, there's a feeling of loneliness that nobody knows what you feel. So I wrote it that for people to understand that you're not alone. You have the same feelings as the guy down the street or the woman down the street or the son that's caring for the mother or the mother that's caring for her son. And I wanted to offer hope that cancer can bring a lot of blessings in your life. You have to open your eyes and see them. Then also that there's hope with a good day or a good report on a PET scan or a CAT scan. You're going to have bad days. You're going to get bad reports. You're not going to feel well. Then you get scared. But there's still hope. And even hope if you lose your battle. There's hope in death. And so that the people that are left behind still have a life to live and people to serve. And so that's basically the whole gist of the book, and that's why we wrote it, and that's why I wrote it.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Chris Spielman. He's written a new book. It's called That's Why I'm Here: The Chris and Stephanie Spielman Story. If you have a question or comment for Chris, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You've said that you wrote the book in real time with Bruce Hooley, and we were just talking about it before we went on the air. Explain how you wrote it with Bruce.
Well, we always had, the idea of putting this story down on paper. Steph and I did, and obviously when a disease takes hold like it did, our plans were put aside. And we were originally wanted to co-author a book together. But I wanted to put the story down on paper, but I wanted to make it raw. And so about a week after I found out that the cancer had spread to her brain and to her spinal fluid and that the outcome wasn't positive and looked like a death was coming, within the next year, I thought the best way to get our message out and the best way to keep serving, which was our pledge, was to write it when I'm very emotional. And I think when you look at it, when you receive that news that there's nothing more that we can do, you start replaying basically your whole life and how we met, what our mission was, what we did, what we accomplished together as a husband and a wife, what our family has become. And I wanted to put all those stories down because they were clear in my mind. Then also I wanted to put my emotions down, how I felt about the good news of cancer, the bad news of cancer, how we dealt with things. And so while all that was going through my mind and I was looking through journals, I called my friend Bruce Hooley, who I used to work with, on a radio station and said, let's get this going. I mean, he knew about the goal. He was pushing me on it, and I felt that that was the right time to do it because everything was so real for me and so raw at that particular time.
When you talk about replaying your life with Stephanie and your life before Stephanie, there aren't many years before you met Stephanie. You were very young.
Right.
There were many years. You were married for?
About 20 years, yeah. So 89 to,
but
yeah.
Knew each other long before
yes,
that.
Yes. We started going out. She was 15 years old. I was 17. And we dated and dated throughout high school and college and basically were each other's best friend. And so to watch that unfold, and not only are you watching your spouse unfold, but somebody that you knew for your entire adult life and watch them go through this. So it was difficult to write at times. It's difficult to read still to this day, but it's also healing to read.
Anita in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Anita.
Hi. I just had a question for Mr. Spillman. I lost my identical twin sister to ovarian cancer. And in our search, which included going to the James and Cleveland Clinic and MD Anderson in Baylor University, mm-hmm. Houston, Texas, along the way, they asked if we'd ever had a transvaginal ultrasound. And we had had mammograms since the time we were 40, colonoscopy since 50, took all the baseline tests. We had never heard of this. And just briefly, it's a test that saved my life and would have saved hers had we known about it, because we would have had it at the appropriate time. And we were diagnosed on our birthday several years later. So my, and I guess crusade is not too strong a word, my crusade is to get everybody aware of this test, which is not very well known for a number of reasons, $250 test. Mm-hmm. And it's not covered mostly, well, mine was, my sister was ill, but it's not usually covered by insurance. And I had a very difficult time with this. In fact, the title of your book resonated with me, Mr. Spillman, because that's why I'm here. I feel that is the reason that I'm here. And I make no secret of the fact that the day my sister died, I tried to go with her. And I have come to believe, our friends and family say she got there and she pushed me back. But I have come to believe that this is my reason for being left behind. And so I want to know, how do you, I don't envision an organization as large as yours. I know you've raised $10 million. And I thought, all I want to do is get the word out to women about this test to ask their physicians about it. How do I start? What do I do? I have contacted the public of some well-known people who have lost a wife, mother, or friend to ovarian cancer. I'm getting some interest in maybe getting a spokesperson or something like that. But what do I? Where do I go for?
Right.
I mean, how do you start something like this? Well, I don't
okay.
even know what to do.
Let me try to advise you the best that I can. First of all, I'm sorry for your loss, and that your loss is not for nothing. And I'm sure that your sister lived an honorable life, and by you coming back, as you say, I think gives you the opportunity to honor your sister and how you live. What I would do is that I would get with an organization that has organization. And what I mean by that, and I'm only going to speak to the one that I'm most familiar with, and that would be the James Cancer Hospital and Soloff Research Institute. I could get you, maybe off air, I can give her a number to call, and people can direct you on how to start a fundraiser or how to start raising awareness, and maybe they can then lead you and guide you. But I do think if you have passion, which you do have, I just can hear it in your voice, and you have a mission and a willingness to see it through, even though it could get tough at times, then if this is meant to happen, it will happen, especially if you're passionate about this cause. So hopefully I'll have the information and I'll give it to Ann, and then she can maybe pass it on.
Okay, Anita, why don't you leave your phone number with our screener?
Oh, okay? All right.
All right.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for your call, Anita. Take care. To hear Stephanie describe it in that audio clip we heard mm-hmm. At the beginning of the show, the decision to share her story was somewhat spontaneous. At least it felt that way from listening to that. Was that the case? And then I also want to ask about your decision to take leave from the NFL. Was that a spontaneous decision? But first, the idea of going public with her illness.
That wasn't spontaneous. I mean, it's devastating news. And so I think that I was coming off of a neck injury that happened in 97, and I was trying to make this comeback in Buffalo in 98. When I told Stephanie that once I found out what chemotherapy entailed and what was going to be required of her, I decided to say that I can't go to Buffalo and play football. And let me make it perfectly clear, I had the blessings to be able to financially make that decision. A lot of gentlemen in that same position can't afford to do that because they have to work to support their families, and those guys are also real strong warriors. But when I told Steph that I was taking football off, she was more devastated by that news than the news when she found out she had cancer, because she knew what this game meant to me, and this is what I trained my whole life to be. Then when I told her, I think I took maybe just a little bit of leadership role at that particular time and said, Steph, this is not even an argument. That doesn't mean it was an easy decision for me. It wasn't. It was the right decision, 100% the right decision. I knew that. It wasn't easy.
And you didn't get anybody's advice either. You decided on your own. You didn't.
I'm a very instinctive person. I really trust my instincts, and I try to think things through. But this one, the answer was right before me. I mean, I said to her, and in sickness and in health, and so I meant it. And I couldn't imagine letting her live in one state and me live in another state doing my own thing while she was going to go through what she was about to go through. I wouldn't let her take that journey alone. And so but then once we saw the attention that it started to receive, which I didn't know why it did, but it did, maybe because of the platform that I was on, she saw the opportunity and I saw the opportunity that, well, maybe we can have an impact on somebody else, and maybe a sports guy or somebody that follows the NFL will go home, hear this news, and ask his wife, hey, did you schedule that mammogram, or did you do your self-breast exam lately, or did your mother do it? So that was the main purpose of going public.
We heard it at the top of the hour that you believed you had become a somewhat narcissistic person, mm-hmm. was a word you used. And in the book you wrote, quote, prideful, self-willed, professional athlete. Stephanie's diagnosis changed that. Was that over time, or...
Well,
how did that happen?
I think I think kids that are just at graduating college and all of a sudden you're handed a certain amount of money, you tend to become 1, 2, 3 me. I think we all go through that phase in life. Then once we get married and we have children, we start to reevaluate. I mean, what I meant by the narcissistic comment was everything was always about me. It was about my career. It was, I'm an NFL player. That's what I am. Where we go on vacation, what we do, what we eat, how we do it is all going to depend on me, because this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And that wasn't mean I wasn't a bad husband. I was a good husband, I believe. I was a good father. But was I always there emotionally and mentally? No, I wasn't, because I was an NFL player. Then when you are, but I always in my mind thought that I was a husband and a father first. But I didn't know that until I was put to the test. And the test is, okay, here's your choice. Are you going to be a husband and father and stay home and take care of this situation when you're financially able to do that? Or are you going to go continue to self-serve as far as living your dream? This woman supported me and my kids supported me throughout my whole career, from high school to college to the NFL. Well, I cannot in good conscience and not be a hypocrite if I told her that I love her, she's the most important thing, my family's the most important thing next to my faith, then I got to make a decision. I've got to cut what I love to do, what I felt I was born to do, and that's being a football player, from my life so that her and the kids could have 100% of my attention at a very difficult time.
In the book, you write about a question that you heard in your mind, and I want to get to that when we return, because you heard the question in your mind before you knew Stephanie was sick.
Yes.
So we'll be back with Chris Spielman right after this. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and if you contributed to our station this year, thank you. Your support provides for the highest quality news and information. Our fiscal year ends on June 30th, and we still have about $50,000 to raise to meet our annual goal. If you wish to make an additional gift or fulfill your current gift, you can do so right now at WOSU.org. or by calling 866-897-9678. Thank you for supporting 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Jazz Arts Group, taking jazz to a wilder place as the Columbus Jazz Orchestra takes the stage at the Columbus Zoo for the seventh season of Jazzoo, kicking off July 13th. Tickets, reserved tables, and more details at jazzartsgroup.org.
75 degrees in downtown Columbus. Partly cloudy skies today along with some sunshine and a high near 85. Clear skies tonight, a low of 63. More sunshine on Saturday, a high of 87. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. My guest this hour, Chris Spielman, ESPN college football analyst and author of That's Why I'm Here, The Chris and Stephanie Spielman Story, of course, about his journey he and his wife took after she was diagnosed with cancer. If you have a question or comment for Chris Spielman, you're welcome. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to the Facebook page and you can tweet me at Ann Fisher, WOSU. So let's get back to that question, because it's right at the very beginning of the book. What was the question?
Well,
and
the
how
question
did you hear
was,
it?
What's your purpose? And I was playing a football game, a Monday night football game in Indianapolis, and I would arrive at the stadium, especially road games, as early as I can, and I would go through a certain routine, and I would get myself worked up into a frenzy because I knew that there were big guys in the other locker room trying to get me. So I had to get myself ready to go. And I went through this routine numerous times. And as I was going through this routine, all of a sudden, I don't know, I describe it in a book, I think, as like Times Square flashing lights or the ticker tape sign. When it was an overwhelming question, more than a thought, it was like a headline. And the question was, Chris, what is your purpose? And remember, I defined myself as a football player up to this point. My purpose.
You're already doing it.
Yeah, I was going to Ohio State, going to play in the NFL, going to coach, and going to die. I actually literally defined myself like that in an interview when I was a younger NFL player. Shook it off and went out and was going out for the coin toss as part of the start of the game. And when I stepped around the hash marks, again, that question popped into my mind, and it was very clear. It was almost as strong as a voice, and it's, what is your purpose? Disregarded it, played the game, suffered an injury in the fourth quarter. I hit a man very hard. I could not feel anything in my body. I was completely paralyzed for about 3 or 4 seconds. And being a smart guy that I was, I didn't tell anybody, got up and continued to play. I tried that the next week. I ended up herniating a disc, and the fluid inside the disc exploded onto my spinal cord. I had a major surgery, a fusion. Was sitting in the hospital. That question came again. July, the phone rang. Found out that Stephanie had breast cancer. That question came again, and this time I had the answer. And the answer was to serve God, to serve family, and serve community in that order. And now I had a chance to say what I am, and I'm a man of faith, and I was a husband, and I'm still a father, and so it gave me a chance to put my words into actions.
You wrote about your immediate reaction to the news that Stephanie had cancer. You didn't even know how serious it was at that point, but you seemed to have a really natural reaction to it. Anger, denial. Why me?
Mm-hmm.
Why us?
I also had blame. And I don't know if this seems, I don't know, kind of old school or not, but I didn't do my job as a husband and a father to protect my wife and protect my children from harm. Now, obviously, that doesn't make any sense. I can't control the cancer world, but that's your initial response. And I had to why me because of my career was in jeopardy. My wife had cancer. We just lost a third child. She miscarried a baby, which led to the original diagnosis,
right,
by the way. And so all these came about, and I had just we were driving down to meet the doctor, and I was at a stop sign, and I started punching a car in the windows. I thought I would break a window, and then she looked at me with a look of disgust and disappointment in her husband. But she never looked at me, and she used a voice she never used with me before, and she looked at me with this peering, gazing eyes and said, "How dare you? You know, how dare you say all those things when all the blessings that we've been given?" And I think that's one of the things that we try to get in the book, is that so many times people look for blessings and they keep, okay, what's next for me? What's the next blessing? What's the next blessing? As opposed to taking a moment, stop and look behind you and look at all the hands and blessings that you've received up to this particular point. And so that's that was my initial reaction. Then I got into kind of warrior stage, educated myself as much as I could on cancer and nutrition. I would ask doctors the same question different ways, and better be sure I get the same answer, or no, they don't know what they're talking about. And became her teammate and her voice, because when a person gets diagnosed with cancer, originally they're numb. I think they are. At least I know people react a different way. But sometimes when doctors or nurses are explaining to you what you're about to go through, it's just kind of white noise.
Right over your head.
Yeah. So you need to be focused and in intent on getting all the information you can for the person that you are going to take care of.
But Stephanie's reaction to you in the car that day was not necessarily typical. She pretty much at the outset was going to fight it, mm-hmm. but also was going to accept it.
Well,
she was more upset about you quitting football than...
But you got to remember that was a couple of days after right. the original diagnosis. I mean, the original diagnosis was devastating to her. Here's a 30-year-old woman, and just coming off the tragedy of losing a child to a miscarriage. And her husband is freaking out about his career. And so all of a sudden, we were living this fairy tale life, and all of a sudden, real life problems hit. How are we going to handle them? And then to find out she had cancer, she was devastated. And a lot of those feelings that I read about that I had, I didn't show those to her. I showed a strong, tough guy to her to let her know that I'm not leaving or I'm not doing anything. I'm going to stay with you and we're going to get this taken care of. But inside, I was tearing up. Then about 4 hours later, that's when the conversation, after everything sunk in, where I blew up and said, "This is crazy. Why is this happening to us? You know, we don't deserve this." And that's when she gave me the "How dare you" look. So,
and the piercing eyes. If there's one thing about Stephanie that always captures my attention is her eyes.
Yeah. Well, when I got the evil eye, I got it. That's for sure.
There's the evil eye.
This was the evil eye guy. What are you doing, dude? Quit feeling sorry for yourself.
Your daughter Madison wrote the foreword for the book to explain the title. Tell us how that came about.
Well, Maddie was always, I think Stephanie was a very good writer, and Maddie's, I think, inherited that trait and quality from her mother. And we never force our kids to be involved in this world. They have to make a conscious decision if they want to get involved. They can get involved. Raising money and being a fighter against cancer, you have to have passion to do that. Maddie gave a speech in class at a Burlington High School about her mom and what it meant. And Maddie... I asked her to write the foreword, and she based it off that speech, plus she had a few things. But she's also said some very profound things since then. We were in Indianapolis for an event, and Maddie was actually interviewed. And one thing that I hold on to, and I still use to this day, when the interviewer asked Maddie, "Do you wish your mother was here?" And Maddie answered, "Well, of course I do, but that would be very selfish because of where she is now." And when Stephanie passed away, I mean... people that have lived with cancer patients understand toward the end that's not the person, that's not the mother that they know and love. And so it was our belief and is our belief and our hope, a hope to us that is not a wish but a hope that is a promise, that she's been restored to all her glory and beauty that we knew her as mom.
There was a story after Stephanie died, I think it was before the the memorial service and someone sent you a letter.
Right.
You've got probably thousands of letters, notes.
Mm-hmm.
It was about a woman who was leaving an event late. Stephanie was the last person out in the hallway. Then she had an opportunity to go up to Stephanie and tell her story about cancer.
What's actually inspired the name of the book, I forget the event, and this lady recognized Steph, and she went up to Steph and explained to her that her newly diagnosed cancer. Then Stephanie gently asked her about her doctors, about her treatment, how her family's doing. And the woman got a little bit emotional because she had a surgery coming up, and she then said, Steph, I'm sorry for bothering you with this. Then that's when she said, Stephanie gently grabbed her hand and looked at her and said, don't you understand? That's why I'm here. And the lady said she felt strangely calm after that conversation. And I believe is still doing well today. At least the last time I checked, she was doing well. And so that's one of the cool things that we realized in how we deal with loss is that it's very rare, I think, that people go through life with their clear mission on what, from my perspective, what God has in store for them. God chose to use Stephanie in a way that would impact people's lives, whether it was comforting or giving them hope. And she had a gift for doing that. And for that woman to share that, and I actually read it in the Columbus Dispatch about a day or two after Stephanie passed away, and that gave me great peace, knowing that, you know, this death wasn't for nothing. Even if this lady was helped, that would be enough for me to accept the death because I knew it was coming for Steph after her death.
My guest is Chris Spielman. You know who he is, but he's also the author now of a new book, That's Why I'm Here, The Chris and Stephanie Spielman Story. If you want to talk to Chris Spielman, you can. You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Has the Chris and Stephanie Spielman story touched your life over the past 14 years? Give us a call and tell us your story. The welfare of your children plays a really big role throughout the book. It's always something that you're going back to and kind of looping back to about how they're doing and what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, that's because that was, I think she had no fear of death. I think her only major concern and worry, like most mothers, or in that case, most fathers, was, okay, how are my kids going to be? How are they going to handle everything? And I remember distinctly for my side was that I always used to pray for grace and mercy on my children and grace and mercy on Steph that she'd be healed. And I found, and I realize this every day, that grace and mercy didn't come through healing. It came through of how my children have dealt with the loss of a mother and the fact that I get to see them smile every day and they live a normal life. Now, that's not to say we don't have issues and challenges. Most people do when they lose a mother at a young age. But for the most part, they've handled this experience better than I ever could have imagined, because that was my biggest concern and, frankly, how I was going to do as a single parent.
You've made several references to your religion, to your faith in God. Mm-hmm. Has that, sometimes that kind of message is criticized by people.
Sure.
Why can't you just tell us what you have to say without wrapping it in that kind of paper?
Because it would be false if I didn't wrap it in that paper. And Stephanie was very spiritual and believed in her Christian faith and her Christian walk. But I'll tell you this. It is I believe that, you know, all religion is free will. You're going to make a choice. And it is our job to explain, if you want to know what we went through, how we did it, then I'm going to tell you the truth. But we never, ever would think of imposing our faith or belief on anyone. That is not my position. But we will expose what we believe. I'm not going to impose it and say, you know, this is what you have to believe. That's your choice. But I will expose what we believe and what worked for us.
You told me earlier on that people did criticize you and people criticized Stephanie. Sure. What did people criticize you for?
Just trying to get more attention. And if I didn't give an answer, because being working in the sports world and as an analyst, you give opinions. That's what you do. People don't like your opinions, and your opinions, you know, you're just saying that to get more attention so that you can raise more money, or what's the matter? Your fund dying up, you need more money, you need more people's attention. And Stephanie got criticized for being an attention seeker and an attention grabber all the time. But the good, believe me, far outweighed the bad. It's interesting, I don't know, obviously you remember, which was a big story last year, when Coach Trussell went through what he went through.
Sure.
And, you know, as an analyst and as a person who's paid for an opinion, I've always tried to be a very truthful person. And what I believe, I made a couple things where people thought it might not have been positive toward Coach Trussell in some of the statements that I made. And, you know, I received emails and a couple death threats, and one in particular that was a little troubling was, I hope you die like your dead wife, you know. So that's part of the world that we live in, and Columbus is a very unique situation where it's very passionate. It's passionate not only about football, it's passionate about a lot of things. And so there's good that comes along with that passion, and there's also stuff that you have to handle if you're a person in the public eye. The good, though, for the most part, far outweighs the bad.
More than $10 million you've raised since the fund was started. The original goal was $100,000.
Yeah, then it bumped to $250, now $10
million. $10 million. It was announced yesterday.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing to me. And I'd like to think, if I had to summarize it, it's and still is today, from lemonade stands to, you know, cruises to luncheons to dinners. To me, it's just it shows what Ohio State is about, the community, and if they get behind a cause or somebody that they can believe in, it's a very powerful force and can do a lot of amazing things. And it's very important, of that $10 million, that all that money is directed directly toward research. There's not one cent that goes to overhead or cost. I know that there's a lot of other fine organizations out there, but all the monies that we give them don't go to research. There's overhead and costs that they have to pay for. And I understand that, but I proudly say that ours goes directly to research.
Why isn't there overhead?
Well, it's a fund set up at the James Cancer Hospital.
Okay, so
the
they
staff
handle
is
it.
Already in place. Yes, so that's the beauty of it. And the other thing is, and it's important for people to know that I feel very accountable. If somebody makes a donation to the fund, whether it's $2 or $100,000, that I feel very accountable for that money. And so the people that benefit from the fund, the researchers and the doctors and the scientists that benefit from the research fund, that we go in and do a review of what they're working on. There's a triple negative breast cancer drug that they're working on now. There's a diagnostic drug that will immediately find cancer through imaging, then start treating that cancer right away that they're experimenting with. There's tumor banks that we created with that fund, where once a tumor, if women would donate their tumors to this bank, then you can test new drugs on that tumor to see how it reacts, because there's so many different types of breast cancer. And so if those projects aren't showing progress, we will then defund that, take the money, and get it to somebody else that has something going on that shows progress and promise. Very important.
I'm talking with Chris Spielman, author, ESPN college football analyst. He's written a book. It's called That's Why I'm Here, The Chris and Stephanie Spielman Story. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Mm-hmm. previously on Car Talk.
Now, yeah. Since I've been using it, I actually feel like I'm getting some more power out of the car.
Oh, you sap.
I haven't even gotten to the argument yet. So I told my fiance this, and she said, "Ah, you sap."
Join us for more keen yet sensitive analysis this week on Car Talk.
Car Talk Saturday at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Be sure to watch Columbus on the Record. It's tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. This week, guest host Ann Fisher and her panel discuss the pending Supreme Court decision on health care, bribery and corruption at the Statehouse. The Mandel versus Brown Senate campaign heats up with new ads. Those topics and more on Columbus on the Record Friday night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV.
Support for 89.7 comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Information about how Montgomery & Associates can help you achieve your financial goals is at themontgomerysolution.com.
A mix of sun and clouds today, warming up to a high of 85. Clear skies for tonight, a low of 63. Sunshine on Saturday, a high of 87. And more sunshine on Sunday with a high of 91. Currently 75 degrees in downtown Columbus. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
My guest is Chris Spielman, who with Bruce Hooley wrote a book. It's called That's Why I'm Here, The Chris and Stephanie Spielman Story. If you have a question or comment you want to make, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Colleen in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Colleen.
Yeah, thanks. Hey, Chris, thank you so much for doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
And I'm a physician on the west side of Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And the question was put to you about using your faith when you're talking about breast cancer awareness. And I have to say that the patients that I see do the best with any diagnosis when they have a deeply rooted faith. They handle, treat their diagnosis, you know, in a way that I just can't describe. So I'm glad you brought awareness to your faith and to breast cancer both. So thank you.
Thank you. I think when you look at it, it's, and for us, I mean, it is who we are. And if you're going to write a book, and if you pick up the book and you'll read it, you'll see about plenty of weaknesses that I have exhibited and plenty of mistakes that both Steph and I made, but also you can see how we, I think, triumphed over those weaknesses. And, you know, our faith was our number one driving force in doing everything that we did. Helping people was second, but we really felt called to do that. And again, Stephanie and them during this call and this mission understood that this was what she was put on this earth to do.
Absolutely.
So thank you for sharing that with me.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Colleen. We have an email from Kathy in Worthington. She writes, "I just would like to express my gratitude to Chris for the great work that he and Stephanie have done and that he continues to do to advance awareness and research about breast cancer. I had my breast cancer surgery in late 1998 and was inspired during that time by Stephanie's courage and their public efforts to battle this disease. Thank you. Your work brings hope for my children and so many others."
Thank you.
Another email from a listener. "How did Chris's background as an athlete impact and affect how he dealt with Stephanie's illness?"
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. You have to understand, I was the son of a football coach. Surprising, I know. And, you know, I was trained to compete. This is what you do. Whatever you do, I don't care what the outcome is, you give everything that you have, and you never quit, and you never surrender, and you fight till the very end. And so when the diagnosis came down, you have a choice to make, a couple choices. For us, the two choices was either run to God or run away from God, and the second choice would be to, do we fight or do we fold? Do we go down in this tower or under this chair, cower, wither away, and die? Or do we stand up and start swinging? It's not going anywhere. The challenge is still going to be there. We can't get away from it. So what we have to do, instead of being on the defensive, go into the offensive and attack, 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 and throw the first punch. So that's all I'm sound like I'm giving a locker room speech to a football team ready to go out to play, but that was the game plan in going to attack and treat Stephanie's cancer.
Well, when you were talking about how you prepare for how you would prepare for games,
mm-hmm.
you kind of glossed over it. It was it was extreme in some ways.
Sure.
Amazing. You'd get there first, and it's interesting to read. I kind of
don't be shocked, Dan. It's okay. You're not the first to be shocked.
I'm before Title IX, so I didn't do a lot of sports, but it was very interesting, and it made me wonder how how much of that energy, because that's a lot of energy you would put into long before the game would start, how much you transfer to this and how that feels.
Well,
with what you
clear.
Do with all of that.
I'll be clear. I mean, you know, I hate cancer. I absolutely hate it. Not only what it did to Steph, but what it does to so many people. Now, that being said, I also respect the disease because it's smart. It can mutilate. It can change itself into something else. If you're going to attack it, it'll hide and become a very little small cell. It'll move to another part of the body. It'll disguise itself. Then when it wants to attack again, it'll show up and blow up again. It's very smart. It's very difficult. It's a very complex disease. And so in order to take on an opponent like that, you've got to have a healthy hate for it, to be honest with you, at least from my opinion. And so that's how I approached it, is that I absolutely hate it. I respect it. I understand that it's powerful. But cancer will not win. In the end, I think when you have a human spirit and you have a desire and a willingness and dedicated physicians like people over at the James and other places willing to find a cure for this disease, eventually we will win out. We always do.
Stefania in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's Stephanie, actually, but that's close.
I knew I was going to mispronounce it, but...
Well, it's easy to do. I am a 16-year breast cancer survivor.
Hey.
Yeah, and I went through a bone marrow transplant at the James because I had a lot of positive lymph nodes, and I'm doing really well. And I'm just very grateful that you chose to do what you did to bring the... my mom had breast cancer back mm-hmm. in the 60s. Nobody talked about it then, you know. It was like nobody even visited her in the hospital. It was really sad. And it was it's so different now, and I'm really glad that the money is going to the James, and it's... I'm very impressed that all of it is going into research, because that is obviously where it needs to go, and it's going to benefit so many people down the line, including my daughter, I hope. And
yeah.
I just think you and Stephanie made an extremely wise decision.
Well, thank you.
And, you know, you've helped so many people.
Thank you. You know, it's interesting that you say that when talking about, obviously, drugs and new drugs being created. Stephanie was a willing participant in clinical trials. Oftentimes knowing that this would not
benefit her,
mm-hmm. but maybe it'll benefit somebody 5 years from now, 10 years from now, or it might benefit one of our three daughters somewhere down the line. And it takes a courageous woman to go through that. And so, I thank all the patients that decide to participate in those clinical trials and for you, not only hoping to help you, but I think also what you're doing a service to future breast cancer patients is amazing.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think I was lucky. I didn't have to go into a clinical trial and have the option of maybe getting a bone marrow, maybe not, because at the time, bone marrow transplant was absolutely my best option to live, to raise my children. So, the James was, you know, I can't say enough wonderful things about the staff there. They're amazing. And as are you and with your wife.
Thank you.
And good luck with your children.
Thank you,
Stephania.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, you do talk about you had the resources to go anywhere for treatments.
Right.
For Stephanie.
Well, I looked at it like this. I mean, I think there's so much more to recovery than just medicine. I think faith has a part of it, feeling at home, being at your comfort level. And for us, that was the plan that worked. And I know that the James Cancer Hospital, at least This year was one of only two cancer hospitals to receive an exceptional rating by the NCI. Only two in the country. The other one would be MD Anderson. And so I thought that this was the place to get her the best possible care. But the other thing is that the doctors that I dealt with, I would say, all right, I know you got a, I know you got somebody at Sloan Kettering. I know you got somebody at the Cleveland Clinic or the Mayo Clinic or MD Anderson or whatever other cancer hospitals there are in the country. Get on the horn. What's their opinion? We have these great things where you can send scans and get their opinion, get their read, tell them what the treatment is, what the regimen is, and would they do the same thing or they would do different options. They never had a problem doing that. And they would come back with reports. This is what my guy said at MD Anderson. This is what my guy said at Sloan Kettering. This is what they're doing there. This is what they're doing here. Then you get to make the choice on how you're going to be treated and where you're going to be treated.
In an interview for 614, mm-hmm. You were asked about whether you would stick to college football analysis or maybe shoot for the NFL. You said that you would see what happens, that you just kind of go one day at a time, let whatever happens happen. And more than anything, I think, that illustrated to me the transformation of your life. That's a discipline in itself, given what you said earlier about high school football, yeah. OSU.
It's crazy. I would say this. I would say that throughout this journey, you know, I don't want to do what I do. I mean, let's be honest. You know, I want to have all the money in the world, live in Hawaii and spread good cheer and give it all away. That's what I want to do. I don't want to be a breast cancer advocate or a fighter, but I am. And I will do the best that I can every single day to do that. In our house, we live by this motto, and I think a lot of people that are listening that have dealt with cancer directly or indirectly will understand this. And this is my motto on how I approach certain jobs that I do. I got a lot of them. I do a lot of different things. Is that today's a good day. Tomorrow looks pretty good. After that, I have no idea. I have zero idea what's going to happen. I have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow. But I will live today. And I will do the very best that I can today. Then tomorrow's looking good. Hopefully God will give me that day. If not, fine, take me home. Or hopefully the next day. I have no idea. But today is a good day. And so I approach that with the way I, with my career as a breast cancer fighter, as a father, and moving forward.
Anna in New Albany, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Anna.
Thank you. Pleasure to hear what you all have to say. I was curious how, Chris, do you deal with the idea that cancer presumably is a creation of God and that hate that you feel for it? How do you reconcile that with your faith?
Okay, that's interesting. That's a very good question. Well, it's my feeling that we live in a fallen world. And disease is created by the original sin. And we can get into a religious discussion another day. But I think that, you know, we're not made for this world, in my humble opinion. We're made for something greater and better. And so I understand, I don't think God looks at death as we look at death. I think God looks at death as an entrance into eternal life. And so, although I hate what it does here, I know in comparison to eternity, it can never touch anybody again. It'll never touch Steph again. And that's how I deal with it, reconcile it in my mind.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you.
You're going to be traveling a lot?
Yes, I am. And I'm actually heading up to Cleveland to speak tonight and some book signings and some ESPN things. And I have all kinds of little speaking engagements that I do. I've kind of been able to benefit the fund and have a career as far as speaking and raising awareness. And it's God put me where He wants me to be at this particular time. And I have any bitter feelings. I was grateful to have the time that I had. Stephanie had a saying that she left on a videotape for me and the children. And one was to live your life, and for me to live my life and continue on with my life, and for my kids to continue on my life. In the videotape, the things that I take out of it most was that she prayed constantly for the future spouses of our children. She prayed for me to let her go and still honor her and love her, but let her go and continue my life and hopefully in all aspects of life. And the other was never to use, this was her direct quote, never, ever use my death as an excuse for anything that you do, ever, but use it for motivation in all that you do. And so my children wake up every day and I remind them of that. You're not the only kid that lost a parent. You know, toughen up. Let's go. Your mother said, hey, don't use my death as an excuse. It's not an excuse in our house. It can't be. Now, we deal with it, but we're not going to use it as an excuse. In fact, we'll use it as motivation to do the best, very best that we can do to honor her in all that we do.
And you knew you were headed in this direction before Stephanie died.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, we had the good fortune of preparing for death. Now, there's good and bad to that, because it's very difficult to sit there and watch somebody that you love waste away and watch a cancer take their mind and body from you. Very difficult. But at least you prepare yourself for that. Then understanding that all that will be renewed and restored where there's no more fear, no more tears, no more sorrow. It's all gone. And for that, I'm so grateful.
Chris, I want to thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Chris Spielman, he's author of a new book. It's called That's Why I'm Here, The Chris and Stephanie Spielman Story. Thank you for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.